Business success usually comes to those who are too busy to be looking for it. Join RVK for the award-winning RV on Business Show every Tuesday at 12 midday. It's not about thinking out of the box. There is no box. Only on 101.9 Chai FM.
Welcome to 101.9 Chai FM. It's 9 minutes past 12. Thank you so much for joining us. And today we're going to be continuing what we started last week, which was answering a lot of your questions about personal financial planning that has come in over the last couple of months. There's been a steady stream that have come in this week, really touching on the subject that we started last week. So I'm going to get straight into them and try to answer them one by one as we go through them. The first question comes from a lady called Khalifa, and Khalifa wants to know, I have an insurance policy that I took out over 30 years ago. It has a cash value, and many people have told me to cancel it, take the cash, and then buy cheaper life insurance. What is your thought? So my thought, Khalifa, first of all, is thank you very much for the question. And second of all, obviously need to see the policy to make an informed decision. But let's go back to those type of policies that haven't been around for about the last 20 odd years. They're called universal life policies, and they were designed with the following thought in mind. The idea was that one takes out a life policy for a certain amount of life cover. And let's say in those days you needed R1 million life cover to cover your loved ones, to make sure your debts were covered, and to ensure that your legacy was that such that your family could live comfortably. But you paid your premium every month, and thankfully you never died. The logic was at the end of the time, you're now going to turn around and say, well, I paid all this money and I've got nothing for it. Yes, I had peace of mind, but the premium's basically gone. So a portion of the premium was taken, and it was an investment, usually endowment type investment, was bought. So you had these two vehicles running parallel to each other. You had your premium, which a portion was paying life cover, and a portion was paying this investment. And what invariably ended up happening, that the premium on the life cover was not efficient, and the premium on the investment wasn't maximized. So you had two sort of mediocre events going on. The concept was brilliant, but practically, I think actuarially, it worked out a lot more efficient to have a life policy at X premium and investment at Y premium. And therefore, they were stopped. The beauty about those universal life policies is if you look at them, there might be a line item there that says paid up value, which means if you turn around to the insurance company, and I don't think any of those insurance companies that had those in the day, companies like FedHealth and Southern Life and Sage Life don't really exist anymore. They've all been incorporated into other companies around today, like Metropolitan, Momentum, and Liberty. You'll find that you could turn around and say, take my cash value, but if I never pay another premium, how much life cover will I have for the rest of my life? So let's give you an example. And again, this is purely illustrative. I have no figures in front of me. I'm just doing it to try explain the concept. You had R1 million life cover, and you had R500,000 cash value in your investment, and you are paying a premium of R3,000, let's say. If you turn around to the insurance company and say, right, I don't want my R500,000 cash, but I never want to pay another premium again, how much life cover will I get? And you are 50 at the moment. They can do a calculation and come back to you and say, right, if you don't take your cash and you never pay another premium, your life cover will go from R1 million down to R300,000, and you're guaranteed that that will be paid out on your death. One can sit down and do the maths and say, right, okay, well, if I had to pay R3,000 a month with an escalation going forward, and this is the cash value, and this is the life cover, but now I never pay anything going forward. And according to the mortality tables at the moment, I live to my mid-70s or 80s or whatever it is. It's a great idea. Or just personally for me, I don't need the 500,000 rand right now. What I do need is a bit of life cover for estate duty purposes when I pass away. And this is the perfect vehicle for it. So, Khalifa, the long and the short of it is that, unfortunately, the decisions that people make are often driven by very subjective and often financially, not financially sound objectives. People need cash. People need to pay a SARS bill. People need to educate children. Life happens. And all of a sudden, you look at the whole story and there's a cash value of 500,000 rand. You can buy another life policy for 1 million rand. It might cost you more. It might cost you around about the same. I don't know. But you decide that's what you're going to do. And the long-term thought process isn't followed through simply because of the subjective needs at that time. And that's really what a universal policy was all about. I really haven't seen one on the books for a long, long time. I dealt with them a lot in the 90s and the, maybe the 2000s. But I really haven't seen one for a while. So if you do have one, please make sure to sit down with your financial planner, go through it, understand it, even call the company and ask them to please get someone to explain it to you if you're not certain. The next question comes from Jody. And Jody asks a question quite humorously, but it's a question that I see all the time and that I hear all the time. I have a life insurance company with policy A. Policy B and C are hounding me to cancel it and take out a policy with them. And they're both telling me that their premiums are cheaper and I can do better with them. Is this true or is this just sales talk? Jody, you are so spot on. That is the way the insurance industry unfortunately does operate at times. The term that is used is churning. You're churning a policy from one company to another. You're moving it from one company to another. These days, a lot of paperwork, a lot of fact-finding needs to go into the process before you can just willy-nilly go ahead and do that. But let me explain some universal truths about this, and then you can make a decision from there. The first thing is that life cover on its own, pure life cover. If you just say, I want 1 million rand or 500,000 rand life cover today, I don't want cash back, I don't want money back, I don't want to jump through hoops of fire, I don't want to link to wellness programs, I just want life cover, that if I don't wake up in the morning, a beneficiary will get the money, those premiums should be much of a muchness. The variations start coming in when two of the following things happen. Number one, the increases that you have on your life policy on the cover and on the premium affect the current premium. So it's an inverse relationship. If your premiums increase at a higher rate, so let's take an example at 12% per year, your premiums are increasing, your current premium could be lower than if your premiums were increasing at, let's say, 8%. So that's the one thing to take into consideration. The second thing is to take in consideration is what has the life insurance company taken into consideration to work out that premium. So if you look at the South African landscape at the moment, I'm talking about things like Vitality and Multiply, offered by Discovery and Momentum individually. Those are taken into consideration. Do you have other product with the company? Maybe there's a cross-subsidization that happens. A certain company in South Africa, a very prominent company, has a system called integration, where the more benefits you have with them, the cheaper the premium will be for you. And those are the things that you need to take into account. So even though it's just life cover, it's never that simple. The other thing, Jody, I really want you to look out for is Some of the direct life insurance companies where you call them or you do it all online, you've got to be very careful. There's something called premium cover increase, and there's something called, say, premium increase, and something called cover increase. So every year, your cover goes up by 3%, 10% CPI inflation, and so does your premium. In a lot of companies, the premium goes up more than the cover does, so that both don't increase at 5%. The premium goes up quicker, so to speak, than the life cover. But some insurance companies, the life cover stays static. In other words, if you take it out, let's say to cover a bond of 2.5 million rand, and you look at their schedule, they will tell you that in 10 years' time, you will still be covered for 2.5 million rand, but the premium keeps going up. So that's just something to be aware of. It might be cheap now, but understand what you're getting. And number two is that sometimes what happens is that you can buy a specific policy just for a bond. And as the bond amount decreases, so does the life cover on the bond decrease. And anybody's experience will be able to look at a schedule and sort of say, I think this was taken out for a bond, or for debt, or for personal liability, or something like that, simply because the way the figures look. So you really need to someone with a little bit of experience to take you through that. And then Jody, I'm sure you'll be able to work it out. Jody, I just want to mention one more point, but we need to take a quick break. So Craig, please take us to the shops, and when we come back, Jody, I will finish your question.
This is RV on Business.
Jody, to come back to you, the one more thing that I did want to mention to you, before you went to, before I finished answering your question about different premiums on different companies, is that the relationship that you have with your financial planner is very, very important. So if your financial planner happens to be at company A, and you've got a friend and acquaintances at company B and C asking you to move your product, one thing you need to know is that if you've got a good relationship with your financial advisor at A, and that financial advisor has done everything good by you, and they have offered you the best that that particular company that they represent has to offer, if they are a retired agent, I would think long and hard before I moved. Because if God forbid you don't wake up, the chances of that person standing by your family and looking after your interests because of the long-term relationship, I think is a little bit higher, number one. Number two, they have a bit of a pedigree to go back to the insurance company with and say, this client was a client of mine and yours for the last 15 years. This is the story. Let's pay out the claim. So that's the thing to think about. If you have a life insurance policy at a company that is maybe very vanilla, for lack of a better term, in other words, that's straightforward stuff, and you want to get involved in a life insurance company that's offering you all the bells and whistles, and you're very with that sort of stuff, and you do your wellness checks, and you work the systems well, and you travel, and it all works for you, there's nothing from stopping you having more than one life policy. So those are the things that I will take into consideration when one looks at it. Unfortunately, I can say from experience that South Africans, especially now in the current milieu that we live in, where people are really feeling it so difficulty on a monthly basis, prices have gone up, costs are going up, fuel, security, education, medical expenses are just really challenging. That people really look for the bottom line and rather take a few more minutes, hours, days, and check it and make sure that you're doing the right thing. Based on that, I'm going to skip to an email that I got from Philip. Philip, I think, is quite angry. And he starts off with something that I've heard many, many times. Philip says, "Hi, Avi. I know I'm shooting the postman here, but I am very angry with the insurance companies. I feel that they are just out there to make profits. They don't really care about us as clients, and they'll do everything not to pay a claim." So I read that and I thought, okay, well, now I'm going to hear Philip's personal story. And Philip just goes on to say, I've been following two cases in the media recently, and I'm disgusted how the insurance companies are defending their positions and not paying out the client who deserve to be paid out. Please, could you explain to me why they do this when they are so wealthy and they could easily afford to pay it out? But I'm not an insurance company. I don't represent the insurance company, and I'm not part of a board that investigates this. But I've been around a long time. I've lived through a few of these stories, and I might understand the two stories that you're talking about now, one specific that has been in the media a lot. Philip, my experience has been that insurance companies will go out of their way to pay a claim. And I'm not saying that because I work for one of them or because that's my bread and butter. But I find that when the claim is genuine and the paperwork is in order, and I'm not talking about extensive paperwork and reams of lever-aft files coming in a courier van. I'm talking about everything that needs to be there. The claim is paid timeously. I was very frustrated during COVID times. Claims took a long time. It was a new scenario that the companies were dealing with. They weren't quite sure what was going on. Once things settled, the claims were paid out. And there were very many upset people to say, I was deathly ill. I was in hospital. I was in and out of ICU, and now you won't pay. And yet I've had other clients where the claim went through literally like clockwork without any issues. So, Philip, I think the rhetoric of insurance companies being there to take your premiums and not pay claims is false. And I think it comes from a point of, I don't know, maybe a bit of bitterness, but definitely a case of being ill-informed. The cases that we are talking about now are cases where a person has had a multiple illness and the person is looking to claim on those multiple illnesses. And they are stating adverts that the insurance company has run recently, and I'm talking in the last 12 to 24 months, about benefits where you can claim multiple times on a severe illness claim. And the first question I asked is, how old is this person's policy? And I was told it's many years old. Next question was, has it been updated over the years? And the answer is, no, it has not. So it's very simple. To put it in just basic terms, it's like buying a car with a carburetor and then driving it into the dealership and telling them that your injectors are blocked. Your car doesn't have injectors. Yes, it's got a four-stroke motor. It's a 1600, but it's got a different air and oil and fuel intake system. You can't claim, ask them to fix a system that doesn't exist. The same thing with the insurance policy. It needs to be constantly upgraded. Yes, I can hear the voices in the background getting at me, but my financial advisor is never in touch with me. My financial advisor never calls me. Neither does your doctor. And I'm not saying your financial advisor shouldn't. But when you get sick, you don't call your doctor and yell, you haven't called me for a year. Call your financial planner and call him or her out and say, you're very efficient when there's new business happening, but I feel neglected once the business is on the books. And diarize your next appointment. What's new? What's going on? I heard an advert. I saw a launch. My friend told me. I heard at a bribe. Spend 15 minutes going through this. And then you'll find that these issues will become non-existent. The other claim, Philip, that was very famous about 3 years ago was a case where a person hadn't paid their premiums. The policy lapsed. The person died shortly thereafter. The family then paid the premiums and expected the insurance company to pay. Emotionally, one would say, well, big deal. They paid the premiums. Yes, okay, the policy lapsed. But if you think about it in simple terms, you're saying that somebody has passed away because they didn't get oxygen. Oh, now we can afford to pay the electricity bill, the oxygen pumps working again. Give them oxygen, they'll come back to life. I know it's oversimplistic, but it doesn't work that way. The policy has lapsed, it's lapsed. and it's an emotional decision, but the insurance companies need to make a call. The policy was not in force. There was no insurance policy at the time that the person passed away. So I appreciate that emotions run high, but things really need to be taken into account. Again, to use an analogy that can maybe all relate to, if you had your car serviced at 30,000 kilometers, your next service is at 45,000 kilometers, and your engine ceases between 30 and 45, and it's out of warranty, or even if it's in warranty, but they do diagnostics and they came back and they say, this engine was not leaking, but there was no oil in the engine. Your job is every time you pull into the garage to ask the chap who fills up your fuel, please check oil and water. And if the oil's low, ask them to fill it up. And if it's a repeat story, go back to the dealership and say, why am I constantly putting in oil? The same thing's going to happen with your financial planning. There were two or three more life insurance questions, which I just want to answer before we get to the many that have come through about retirement planning. The next premium that's come through again is related to something that we spoke to Khalifa about, and that is the increases that happen every year. So there were two or three emails saying that my life insurance policy started off very affordable. The increases were moderate. And as time went back, the whole thing just went out of kilter. So please explain to me how I can manage this and how I can mitigate this from happening. Okay, let's talk straightforward mathematics. You've got a premium of 1,000 rand. A 10% increase on 1,000 is 100. That's in year one. So you'll be paying in year two, 1,100. In year three, you've got 10% of 1,100, which is 110. If you keep doing that, you won't notice the small increments of 10 rand extra, 20 rand. But once you start getting to 2,000 rand, and all of a sudden it goes from 2,000 to 2,200 or 2,225, it starts becoming sizable. And again, if you've got a larger premium, 5,000, 5,000 goes to 5,500. But all of a sudden goes over 6,000 and your digits change in the front and you notice that. These things are all declared upfront. They're in your policy document, they're on your quote. Even though your quote might say age-related premium, if you look further down in your quote, it'll actually tell you what the premium increases are going to be. And in your record of advice at towards the back, it is incumbent upon the financial advisor to put what that age-related increase is. It might change, so I'll put between this parameter and that parameter, but it'll all be there. And those are things to take into consideration. At the time you needed that amount of life cover, you needed it to increase by this percentage every year in order to keep up with inflation for it to be relevant. But now it's got to a point where you still need the life cover, but you can no longer afford it. What can you do? The last thing you should do is start shopping around for cheaper premiums. By all means, do that, but that's not the first thing to do. The first thing to do is to go back to your financial planner and say, is there anything that can be done? And sometimes by simply changing the way the premium and the cover increases, the premium itself can be adjusted, number one. Number two, maybe just by reducing the life cover amount by whatever it is, you can bring the premium back into a line that is affordable. One thing I just want to be very clear about is that it is almost an actuarial impossibility to do the following. Let's say your increase was now the 1st of July, and your premium went from 1,000 to 1,100, and your cover went from 1 million to 1,050,000. It is impossible to say to the insurance company, okay, put my premium back at 1,000 rand, and I want my life cover to be exactly the amount it was before. It'll never match up. And that's simply because of the way it's costed. So you're always going to have this anomaly, excuse me, this variance going forward between the life cover and the premium. You can definitely ask them to recalculate it, but don't expect them to match it up to what it was perfectly before. There are other ways of reducing the premium, companies like Discovery and Momentum. If you engage in their wellness programs, your premium increase can be slightly lowered, but that's affected by the way you do things, and it's also affected by the amount of life cover that you have and your amount of engagement, and it also could also be affected by your medical aid claims. So those are things that one must take into consideration. The last issue that I really want to touch on is the issue of severe illness. Why is severe illness so much more expensive than disability? This particular person says, I've got both R1 million disability and R1 million severe illness, non-accelerated in bold letters, which means that they are individual benefits that don't affect each other or affect the life cover should you claim. They're called standalone or non-accelerated, depending which company, and the premiums are vastly different. So first of all, Sandra, they would be vastly different, number one. And number two, within both of those benefits, there are different levels of benefit that you can have. To answer the question in broad brushstrokes, it's like this. Severe illness is far more expensive, rand per 10,000, than it is for disability. The reason simply is that your severe illness pays out on diagnosis, and disability pays out only after a investigation. So, for example, if a person says that they have had cancer and they sent in the pathology, and the pathology, always the blood tests, match the criteria, the claim is paid out. It's as simple as that. If a person turns around to us on disability and says, I can no longer function properly because I slipped and I smashed my back on the pavement, and now I'm in absolute agony. Well, let's investigate. How bad is the agony? What can you do? What can't you do? What's the prognosis? How long will it take for it to get better? Those things need to be taken into consideration. Unfortunately, if a person is a paraplegic, if a person loses a limb, let's not be facetious about it. That's straightforward. That's a claim right there and then. How it's paid out is again depending on the policy. But I really would like people just to be aware that these benefits work in different ways. The people sending in questions now, I really don't have time to answer them. I will answer them next week, but I just want to get to one or two questions that I've got in during the week so I can get to them. The first question that came in was from a person who wants to remain anonymous. And they say that I've got a strange thing happening with my retirement annuity, and I'm too scared to ask. I know my premium is R1,000 a month, but I seem to be investing a little bit more than that every month. Yes, with some companies, you could very well be. Let's take a quick ad break, and when we come back, let me unpack that for you.
This is RV on Business.
Welcome back to 101.9 High FM. It's 20 minutes to one exactly. To answer the question that we were talking about, yes, there are insurance companies that are running a promotion at the moment, or in a way, it's the way the policy is structured, that if you have a retirement savings investment with them, where you're putting an amount away on a monthly basis, they will add in a certain percentage, whether it be 1% or 2%, or whatever it is. So yes, it is a way of incentivizing clients, but it's really, really nice. If you had to take a spreadsheet and take those little increases, increase them by your annual increase on your retirement annuity, let's say, and then add them up with a modest 6% return over the next couple of years, it's really money for free that's tax-free on top of it. So I would really be aware of that. But the principle worries me. Not that they're giving you free money, is that you're too scared to ask. That is one of the most important things when it comes to financial planning. You've got to be gutsy and you've got to be brave. You've got to look at your bank accounts. You've got to know what's going through them. You've got to know what things cost. And you've got to sit with your financial planner or yourself every year and say, at the current cost of things, with the current rate of inflation, how much money am I going to need to accumulate when I want to retire at whatever age it is in order to live comfortably? It'll adjust yearly, it'll change yearly. But if you don't do it, you are just living a false reality because eventually your head's going to come out of the sand and you're not going to have the energy or the time or the ability to catch it up. And it's really about making sure you know what things are so that you can adjust, you can make plans, and you can go forward. I can hear people screaming, but I can't afford it. Well, that's another discussion. The most important thing is that you need to know what it is. And again, a simple analogy, if there's something wrong with you physically on your body, you don't ignore it. You go to the doctor. Even if the news is not good, at least you know what it is and you know what the treatment program is. But if you don't check it out, maybe by the time you do, when it's too painful or too unsightly, it's too late to get it done. Unfortunately, we have come to the end of the Zoom. We're running out of time. We've got just 3 minutes left. So, Craig, I'm just going to answer one more question that I've got over here. And that comes from a young person who's just started working. And he said, I was told by the financial planner that to help me that I should be putting away as much as possible now because I will thank him when I retire. Was that just sales garbage or is that true? I suppose it was a bit of sales rhetoric, but it's definitely true. Absolutely true for a number of reasons. Mathematically and statistically and actuarially, the more you put away now, the longer it has to grow in the markets, the better it's going to do. So make sure you choose funds that are as aggressive as you can in order to expose it to as much risk as you can within reason so they can have time to grow over time. Number two, being your first job, I take it that maybe your overheads are a lot lower. You might be still living at home. You might be sharing an apartment. You might not have a family and don't have to worry about the things that the costs that come with raising a family. And therefore, you can afford to put away more. I would definitely, definitely do that. But please just remember, when you put money into a retirement annuity, don't expect to have access to it until you retire. So if you want to be able to have access to money later on, use different vehicles. Either use a unit trust, use an endowment, depending on your tax bracket, or even use a savings account. But make sure that you're saving on a dual purpose, maximizing the retirement annuity for whatever it has to offer, and maximizing your ability to access that cash within the period you might need it, should you want to. Well, we're out of time. Craig, as always, thank you so much for pushing the buttons. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I will be doing a show next week from South Africa. So, being looking forward to broadcasting on home turf. Have a great week. Be well. Keep safe.